kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun episode lined up for you. It might be a review show, and it might be an odd-numbered episode, but Cole, you're here. How are you doing?
I am. I think we forgot what day of the week it is.
Kind of.
Are you confused? Because I'm confused.
No, I'm hot. I'm very hot.
Oh. So today.
And Pernell's here, too.
I am.
Pernell Vaughn, the laundry fairy. How are you doing?
I understand none of that, but I am.
But I laughed, so it was worth it.
but sore as all hell. I don't know what's happening to my body. It hates me. It hates me so much. I exercise, Mother tells us to do, and then my legs are like, "What are you doing?"
Recoiled in horror.
Horror? Oh, nonsense! It's part of a balanced day. You go out and you push a tire down the road, and then you get home, and then you sit, and then you drink water, and you stare at that soda and say, "Not today, bitch." But
I use a cane just to go pee.
Ah, touche. Hey, do some cool battle matrix shit with the cane, twirl it and beat the wall or something. I don't know.
I could just see how many knees I would break then.
Oh my lord.
I think if anything, the doctor would be more confused. So what happened to you? What see if it's this it's a cane. Okay, we understand you walk with the cane. Now how did you break your knee? Well, you see, I took the cane and I started doing martial arts with the cane. It got a little crazy, and okay, that would affect the upper part of your body. Where did the leg part come in? Well, I kind of smacked myself in the leg with the cane. What are you doing?
That sounds like it'd be a far better story than what happened when I actually fucked my leg up last year.
With the cane?
With the cane. No. I dislocated my kneecap. I bruised both the patella and my femur. And I tore my MCL.
But with the Nutella, okay?
No. And okay. Nothing was okay. And all I did was fall in dog puke.
Oh, man. I think about that sometimes, too. How our bodies are just... The human body is such a complicated device. And yet, it succumbs to some of the lamest shit. When you're a kid... You could go head first into a brick wall, cry a bit, go home, and have your mom slap you upside the head with a box of ice cream. Oh, cool, ice cream, I'm good. And you're running out there getting your ass beat again. You're a grown man, a grown woman. What happened to you? Well, I was getting up from the couch. And my back pops.
Your back. I've had that happen.
Yeah, I threw my back out bending over to pet a cat.
Look, the first time I threw my back out, I was 11, and I was bending over to pick up a baseball.
Nice.
And I haven't been fine since.
It just gets in my head. You watch all these movies where, normal average citizens get caught up in crazy situations, and they have to just go from, playing catch with their son to running through alien spaceships and sliding and closing doors. And they never have a scene where the guy's like, "Oh, my back. Hold on. Stop the chase. My back just went out. Do you aliens have any sort of medication I can use? healing beam, something? I don't know. But this scene will not be very exciting until we take care of this situation. I'm just saying. This will be a very boring scenario. I don't think you guys will appreciate it either.
When I fucked up my knee, the orthopedic surgeon, he comes in the room. He's like, "Okay, so we got your MRI back, and we see what's wrong, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and you're going to be back to hiking in 6 weeks. I was like, "Dude, the cane is not a fashion accessory."
You're going to be hiking. I should have been "You'll be back to hiking in 6 weeks. That's kind of cool, because I wasn't hiking before."
Yeah. It's been a year later, and my husband sees me getting up out of my chair. He chases me down with a mop so I don't leave. He just mops around me so the floor's wet, so I'm too afraid to get up.
So is your relationship equivalent to curling? Like, basically, you go to the kitchen, he's like mopping the floor ahead of you to make sure it's smooth.
That's foreplay in this house.
It's like the curling pair. That is some shit. Honey, I want to go get some Pop-Tarts out of the cabinet, okay? Be right there, dear. Stop mopping! I'm going too far!
Just slams into your pets and blows them around.
And then they go become the bowling pair.
Yeah. How many other sports could we shoehorn into this?
Well, I'm I'll ever get to being an athlete. I'm so excited.
Throw the TV remote back and forth. We can get in some lacrosse. Just take the cane, a little like net around the head of it. Put the TV remote. Catch, baby. Boom. Lacrosse. Now let's see what's on TV. Oh, lacrosse. Ew. No. No chance.
Man. I like watching volleyball.
Honestly, sport viewing, I'm in a weird place with that. Like, I've never been into sports per se, but I will say that the more aggressive and nonstop the sport, the more I'm into it. And it sounds kind of mean or malicious, maybe, but it's not intended that way. It's just more like the stakes are higher. They feel higher. Like, you watch football. I know football is a really popular sport, but think about it. You have this one play where the guy throws the ball, he catches, he gets tackled. And now you got to wait until they set up the lines again, and they prepare it all again. Oh, guy just called a timeout. Oh, they're going to think a little longer and get the potato chips out. This is going to be well. Meanwhile, you got some shit like rugby. Ain't stopping. Guy's like a clean to the face, referee to pull the card. He's like, I'm good. Shut up. Move it. Boxing, almost the same thing until they get to the part where everybody's just hugging each other and showing affection for some reason.
But yeah.
Prior to that, it's just pow, pow, pow. And then they have the break being the round change. But that didn't even feel like a break because you just watch the guy get clocked upside the head how many times. You can appreciate the need for the breather. It's okay. You're like, oh, man.
I just got punched in the face for 3 minutes. Let me sit down for 30 seconds and take a sip of water.
Exactly. It's like, I really hope that water's magical or some shit because 30 seconds ain't enough to recoup from that. And they get up and they pummel again and again and again. Like, you think back to like back when Mike Tyson was the hot commodity boxer and how fast his matches used to go. And then people were like giving him crap. Like, oh, I can't believe these matches are so fast. I'm all bull, man. I paid how much for this? And my process, even as a kid, was like, what the hell do you expect? The guy hits like a train. No one's standing up to that. I don't care how good of a boxer you are. Your head is still your head. There is no exercise that adds padding to your cranium. None. There's nothing. You can get bigger arms, bigger legs. Hell, I don't know, buff your knees. I'm still working on that somehow, but buff your knees. But when it comes to your head and your back, ain't shit fixing that. Nothing.
Biggest power. I think Joe Rogan said it. Oh, go ahead.
No, you're good.
I was going to say, I think Joe Rogan's the one who said it. It doesn't matter how big you are. Everybody has an off switch.
Yep. It's that damn dome. Bow! Hit it hard enough. Woo!
Connects in the right spot and you're gone. Lord of Night says his favorite sport is beer pong.
Oh, God.
Sitting here thinking, like, I don't like sports at all. But then I realized that that's not entirely true. Like, if you throw on Bloodsport, I'm going to watch that motherfucker 15 times on repeat.
I feel like there's a sport for everybody. Like, I'm in the same boat you are. Like, if someone generally, if I'm asked the general question, I'm just giving the knee-jerk reaction. Do you like sports for him? My response is going to be, no, I don't like sports. But it's like you said, give me the right sport, the right level of action, I'm in. Even the beer pong that just got mentioned, like, I'm that guy who goes to parties and I want to play games and let's play beer pong. I'm like, fuck no, I want to play beer pong. But there are ways to make beer pong fun. It's just no one ever wants to do them. Those ways are to put stakes in the beer pong. Beer pong needs stakes.
Have you ever seen beer pong? Shit
in the cups. Beer pong.
Beer pong. That's when you put like really awful combinations of shit in the cups instead.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. stuff like that. You need to put some nasty shit in those cups. If that ball goes in, someone's going to suffer, and everyone gets to watch. That would make it fun. There's a game I played called Kings at a Party a couple years ago, and I'm not sure, just in case no one, you guys aren't familiar, it's just some really goofy game where you pull a card off the deck, and depending on the face of it, you have to do something like, you know, seven, reach up to heaven or something.
Oh,
you
know, yeah, five, I remember playing that at parties.
And for the most part, I was like, eh, this is okay. But there was that one card, the king, that made me feel the best. Because the version we were playing, when the king came up, whatever you were drinking, you had to pour a good chunk of it into a cup at the center of the table. And when the very last king got pulled, the last person who pulled it has to drink whatever combination came out of that cup. And that's when it awesome. Came up on this woman and she was in playing, she damn near cried. She did not want to drink it. And that was entertaining as shit. Like, you better drink that shit. You wanted to play the game. Drink the mess. I was like the meanest guy at that moment. Like, I went from being this happy-go-lucky, friendly guy. Like, you better drink that shit. I played for this moment. You're going to drink that. You're going to not like it.
We used to do that at my parties. We used to have an event called Iron Editor, which was, it would be like a 3-4 hour event where every half hour you would take a shot. And there were two teams that were trying to make a music video based on a movie that we select during the party. And everyone Ooh. Would drink alcohol. So they would do shots of whatever. But one of our friends, Devin, he was not really that big into alcohol, so we would just make him weird shit to drink instead. And Avenged Immortal just raided us with 10 people, so thanks, Matt. That is awesome. But some of the weird stuff, like we would put pickle juice in a shot for him to drink, like vinegar he had to drink, hot sauce he had to drink.
By the end, was he just like, please, I want to get drunk with you. Stop. Nope. You signed up for this shit, and now this is more entertaining than the original game. Here's some more pickle juice and insanity pepper. Have fun with that. Why is this game so painful? That's what makes it fun. That's the joy. Without that, it's just hanging out. I have time for that. Make it painful. Make it exciting. Make it awesome.
Dark Mika says, so six shots, that's not that bad. There's a shot to start, a shot every half hour, a shot at the end, and in between your drink and beer. So, yeah, you got drunk during it.
And it also depends on what the shots are. I mean, you could be having to throw some potent shit in there. I had a beer, mind you, that was like 15 proof or 15%. Like,
holy shit.
Shots of that is going to hit you. Again, when I do these games, I'm not fucking around. I want pain. People are going to hurt. I had one time where I had, it's a beer called the Mad Elf, which I'm a big fan of. It's only around during the holidays. And again, it's like 13%, somewhere between 13 and 15%. And for one of those beer pong games, or like taking shots of stuff, I brought that out. And people are like, no, that's too strong. I'm like, how is it too strong? Nah, man, we want to be able to relax while we drink. No, what's the point? If I'm going to drink, I can just drink whenever. The liquor is here. We got together to get drunk. We're drinking. But if you put some potent shit in that cup, you're at the point like, oh, I don't want to drink anymore, man. Like, too bad. You lost. You better drink it. Like, maybe next time you'll win more hands. How about that? That's the game. That's how you play.
Been drunk. I'm starting to think Purnell would be the one person who could actually get me to that point.
Oh, it would happen. It would happen. Though at the same time, it could just as well backfire. You're like, I know what drunk is like now. And I'm like, I need a doctor. But that's the game. That's where the fun lies for me. Like, I will admit there was one variant of beer pong that I think has been spreading a bit more lately that I'm okay with. And that's the, the basketball version of it where people take like five trash cans or seven trash cans and they line those up and you're throwing a basketball across a backyard. And I'm like, okay, now we're talking. So I'm doing like cannonball arm launches, trying to get this ball to knock through like three cans. Like, now we're in. Give it to me like that. But the normal game, I'm like, you know, I can't. And then it gets rougher. So you go to a party sometimes, and there's a variation. You'll go to some parties, and the beer pong setup is like, you know, pretty traditional shit. Hey, man, you want to put some beer pong, line up the cups, put some water in there, throw your ball. That's awesome. And then you go to other parties where these cats have a damn like dictionary of rules that they set up. It was like, okay, here are all the five. There's like the 20 house rules we set up. Here are the conditions where you can get a reach throw. You can re-rack the cups. This is where we get the cup and you put up on top of the fridge. And if you get in that cup, that just clears the entire table. And like just weird shit like that. And then I'll get like, okay, hey, man, I want to play something different. Here's this game called Telestrations. Let's play Telestrations. We're all drunk. It's fun. Oh, no, man. That sounds real complicated. It's fucking Pictionary. You draw a picture and guess what it is? Nah, man, I don't understand this. What am I supposed to do with the pen?
That's confusing.
You put it on the pad. Then what? You draw the image. Nah, man, this is too complicated. Let's go back to beer pong. Now, here are the variant rules to the beer pong play. You got to do the like, how is this less complicated than doodle a picture and guess the image? It blew my mind that night. It literally blew my mind.
To be fair, if it were me, everything I would have drawn would have looked like a dick, regardless of what it was supposed to have been.
Probably.
That would have been fine. That's the joy. I played a game of Telestrations once, and I don't even know how it came. Somehow I was like, Darfur. Like, the actual war-torn country, Darfur. Like, it was a flower field. How the hell did you get that? And then it just went and spiraled out of control. And of course, at one point, someone did guess Sea of Dicks. You know, I was like, it happened. And like, that's not even going to be on a card. Why would you put Sea of Dicks? This is the rated G.
Why would you put Sea of Dicks on a card? That sounds like the perfect game to me.
Don't get me wrong, it was hysterical, but it's just, it gets to that point where you're like, okay, we know what we're playing. You know where the word originally came from. Where did you get Sea of Dicks? And it's like, well, that's the fun. And I'm like, it is pretty freaking fun, though. I ain't gonna deny it. But you can't help but question how it happened. Here for the bags of dicks. Like, boom, just dip them. But, yeah, I never quite got that. Like, how drinking games can get that complicated. And that just for those specific ones. But then you try to, like, another game. And it's like, okay, here's a game with some simple rules. Too complicated, bro. That's from nerds or some shit. Let's get back to the beer pong. I got my variants out. All right, and here's my new trick shot. Behind the back, off the ceiling, through the sewer system, back up, and into the cup while cooking a soda on the table. Why would you cook a soda? How are you doing on the table? Got a hot plate. Whatever. This is ridiculous. Point is, they come up with some crazy shit. I don't understand.
I thought you were going to say they were baking soda.
With baking soda.
Now I'm a little sad.
See, no one's going to get that joke because we don't have a Patreon where all of the stuff pre-recording is available to listen to.
For $1 a month, people can hear the bullshit we say before the show.
That's what I did a Twitter poll about, and the no's, it was a sure, I want more SML or fuck no, hell no. And
really?
Fuck no, 3-2.
I didn't even see the poll. That's not fair.
Now, here's the thing. That's the sort of thing where you don't. This is the one of the rare cases. Like, you don't even do the poll. You just do it. Yeah. And the two people would have signed up. The other three people would have ignored it. And the show wouldn't have changed. Like, there is no loss. Like, this isn't some BS AAA DLC withheld thing. You just are saying, hey, here's some shit that I don't think anybody wants to hear.
That's where our best stuff comes in.
In a box, I'll let you hear it. And if you think it's shitty, I'm going to go, well, you paid $1 for what the fuck did you want? Like,
I'll tell you what. That's I would even system. Pitch in some extra reward shit if we do a Patreon. I'd make us, like, stickers and t-shirts and shit.
Yeah, because, like, honestly, everything I've ever come across in regards to Patreon is I used to think Patreon was some actual bullshit. I'm not even going to front. But in the end, what I came to realize is just the fact that you're giving people an option to say, hey, look, I'm just doing this because I like doing it. It's fun. But hey, if you want to kick back a buck or fin or something and get some bonus shit, that's cool. But if you don't want to, that's cool. I'm going to keep doing it. There's no loss. But for there to be that person that's like, oh god, it's like the soul of the show is gone. I'm like, really? Where'd it go? Did it go to Florida? It's weird shit happens in Florida, I gotta tell you, because I mean, it's like, it doesn't make sense to even be upset about it. It's just you don't contribute and you're still okay. The show hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And
it's still the same shitty show.
Exactly.
Just with extra shitty content that you could pay for some stupid reason. I don't know. I'll kick around the idea of doing a Patreon. It might be fun. I just don't think anyone cares enough.
Yeah, and honestly, that's the thing. Like, if that ends up being the case, oh, well, and it just means no one cares
enough. It's the spaghetti on the wall approach. Just throw the spaghetti at the wall, and if it sticks, hey, we got money. And if it don't stick, well, then fine, whatever. The website's over there. Have fun.
Exactly.
You ain't out none.
And honestly, it has weird side effects. I will give you that. Like, we have a Patreon, our thing, and the tiers go from like $1 up to like $20. And there's nothing to really offer because, again, it's just us saying, hey, we got to pay for servers and shit. If you want to contribute, we'd appreciate it. I think the weirdest thing we ever had was like, Pernell will say your name 5 times on the show. And I was like, I'm tired of that already. This is getting frustrating. I'm not going to do it. But in the end,
we can charge people $1 to hear me say, oh.
And like, one of the things that we did is like, we did the dollar. If you pay like a minimum of $1, you're on like our monthly live stream thing we do and some other stuff. But anyway, the point is, the weird side effect of this is that there are a few times where you'll get a purchase like a Patreon member, and they start to feel like they have access to you because they're cooking you $1 a month. I'm like, no, like I like chatting with everyone because I like people that are into what I'm into. It's fun. It's just hanging out. You could be getting that conversation with me for free. That's not a problem. But at the same time, you get that person like, hey man, I messaged you a question like an hour ago. I never heard anything back. Bitch, you're giving me $1 a month. I got shit to do. Okay. I'm at work. I'm not going to just up and the patron beckons. Like, no. It's you just do what you do. You have fun. And people who are like, hey, I like this show so much, here's $1 or $2 a month. Whatever. And it's just nice. But if they don't, oh well, no big deal. I mean, it's just like you said, the show's SML, someone might listen. If no one listens, we're still doing it. But thankfully people listen, and that's freaking awesome.
It is awesome. And there's people in chat. We're doing a live show. There's people in chat listening to us do whatever the fuck we do for work.
Oh, shit. Someone heard me say all that?
Yeah. Speaking of doing shit for work, we should probably get to reviews.
What I meant to say was that video games are great and everyone is awesome. I've never had a problem with anybody I've ever spoken to, patron or no. Video game reviews are
switch cool. To the radio voice, though.
Hello out there in Radio Land.
Meanwhile, I'm over here like, oh.
It's on the wheels
hi
of steel.
Everybody, welcome to the SML podcast.
I don't think I do know I have a like professional voice. It's awful.
let's hear it
now. You gotta hear it. Yeah,
hello, this is Cole Martin. That's this is bad. My radio voice. And then I say, oh.
Hello, my name is Cole Martin, and I like vegetable. Oh.
It's very, like, constrained to speak like that. You, like, squeeze in your abs. And I'm like, I ain't need that kind of exercise. I'm here with a Dr. Pepper.
Clench your butthole, and the voice just comes out.
It's true.
Let me try that. Hold on. Let me
fill up the leak.
I'm going to clench my butthole and let the voice come through. Oh, brother. SML is going to come up at you in your face.
Maybe that's why I have a squeaky voice.
That was painful. Shoot.
Oh, Jesus.
I better never again with that. Woof. Brother.
Oh, my diaphragm hurts.
Well, should we get to reviews? Because we're 25 minutes into the show and absolutely nothing has happened yet.
Good games. Oh. Moving on. Just get silly. Speaking
of dicks.
That's like the ultimate segue.
That is the ultimate segue. Speaking of dicks, first game to talk about tonight is called Niflheim, developed and published by A Lot of Games, released September 20th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. Your avatar is a brave warrior who has fallen in battle, but instead of finding well-deserved peace in Asgard, his soul is trapped in the harsh world of Niflheim. Survive in this hostile world, ransack neighboring lands, explore dangerous dungeons, and find your way to Valhalla. Pernell, tell us about Niflheim.
All right, so Niflheim, not to be confused with Niflheim, which I don't understand. I guess maybe they thought 2 S would make it easier to pronounce. I don't know. Anyway, point is, you are basically in the equivalent of Norse mythology hell, and you are trying to get out of there and make your way up to Valhalla, the land where victory reigns and heroes get showered in golden showers or whatever. Then the way you're trying to go about doing that is by fulfilling a legend in which someone had mentioned to you that there is a portal you can construct which will get you to Valhalla. But unfortunately, that portal is broken up into about 22 different pieces, and you have to acquire those pieces to construct the portal to get out of hell, essentially. Now, the way this is done is through, which actually ends up becoming a sort of survival game. This is not an action RPG, so if you saw a screenshot with an action RPG, get your head out of that gutter, because this is the wrong sewer, buddy. This game is actually more of a survival game. You start out by choosing one of four characters, each with different perks and stats. Like, for example, the one I picked is able to go hungry for longer. Basically, they don't have to eat as often as the other characters do. But they all have different starting stats and like strength, defense, and stamina. And once you choose them, you also have to choose a location to start in, like the forest or the Icelands or whatever. And each of those locations have different layouts in the form of, like, you know, the forest might be more ripe with like ferocious beasts, but it also has berries and more nourishing items in it.
Whereas speaking of nourishing items, I was wrong. The price is $14.99, not $19.99. So I had to correct that real quick.
Oh, that's a very important detail.
It is. $5 cheaper than I thought it was. I had the wrong info on my notes, so I'm an idiot. Anyway.
You just took too many rugby kicks. That's what that was.
Yes. Too much bacon soda.
Too many bacon sodas. So what ends up happening now is, like, once you have your character and you choose your starting location, you are just kind of plopped down in front of your home base. No explanation, no details, nothing. You're just there. Now, that is not to say that there is no information that they'll provide you. There is a handy button you can press at any time that will bring up a list of tutorial options, which will kind of give you a general gist of what you're supposed to do. It doesn't explain everything, and you're going to fuck up a couple of times, but ultimately, it is enough to get you just kind of moving. So what you end up doing is you plop down and you immediately start off with like a few light items, like a crude pickaxe and a crude regular axe. And like, I think it was like a shepherd's club, which is basically the equivalent of like just a club.
It's a whomping stick.
It's a whomping stick for a whacking day. and the idea at this point is you are now trying to literally survive. So you can walk, the game's visuals are basically a 2D plane, left to right. And as you're walking left to right, you will see various things out in the field. You'll see food items, you'll see wildlife, you'll see trees which you can chop down and then get lumber from them, and just a variety of different resources. You will then take those resources to a variety of different facilities, such as a forge or a sawmill, and you will either use those things to improve the quality of those locations, being the forge, the sawmill, and the kitchen, to do better stuff with them. Or you'll just use it to build important and necessary tools, like better pickaxes and such, or armor and weapons. And since everything in this game freaking degrades, you're going to be doing that a fair bit.
A lot of crafting.
Now, in addition, a lot of crafting. Oh, you're going to be crafting like a motherfucker.
That's a box quote. You'll be crafting like a motherfucker. SML Podcast, episode 4, 5, 7, whatever fucking number it is.
There, yeah, that's part of the quote. That's got to be part of the quote.
But that's what it's attributed to. Episode 5, what fucking ever. Like 15, maybe.
So once you feel like you're comfortable with stepping out into the world beyond, there are a few different places you can try to go. So inside your actual base, there's a mine that you can just go into and mine for ore. It's sort of like a dungeon, but it's also more of a safety dungeon because monsters aren't really in there. It's just a bunch of walls of shadow with a pickaxe to get ore and building materials and stuff. You can go out into the wild, like I mentioned earlier, and hunt animals or take down food items or what have you. But in addition to that, you can also go to dungeons that exist on the map as well. They're just strewn about the map, and when you enter them, you are able to explore them. Again, another 2D style feature. Think like Legend of Zelda, The Adventure of Link, only slower. And the way you transition between floors is that you'll come across a doorway, and when you press up in it, it'll take you either down or up, and the screen will actually scroll to the next level, and you'll walk and traverse there. Now, as you're walking through these dungeons, you'll come across treasure chests, which have items in them, monsters, which you'll have to fight, or various hazards, like, for example, poison gas, which while you're in it, your health will decrease. Now, combat in this game, like I said, this is a survival game, not an action adventure game. So the way combat works is the equivalent of you see a monster. As long as you're holding a weapon, you hold down the X button to attack. Just swing, 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 battle of attrition until they are dead. That isn't to say that you don't have any options, though, because you might equip, say, a bow and arrow instead of a melee weapon, and now you can attack from afar before getting up close and personal and taking damage from the enemy. But the point of mentioning that is to state that you're not going to be doing any dodge rolls or anything like that. At best, there's like a shield for blocking, and you'll just have to get the timing on, so, okay, block now, don't block. But for the most part, it's a battle of attrition, and you're just trying to survive and kill shit. The last two locations I mentioned is that I wanted to mention are there's a town that you can go to, and in that town you can either go to a trade shop, and that tradesman will allow you to swap items or pay for items or sell items for money. Essentially, it's a good place to go if you really need to get some like mining gear or, you know, lumber gear, but you don't have the resources to craft it yourself. You're like, okay, well, this, I have some money, or I can sell some gemstones, and now I can use that to get more gear. And there's also like a crude like kitchen in there. If you didn't build a kitchen in your home base, you can just kind of go there and cook. So, and the last thing you can do is actually go to the other areas that you did not select at the beginning of the game. You are able to traverse the world map and go to different regions and see what they have to offer, which is a good thing because that's likely where all the other dungeons will be to get all the different boss monster battles to get the parts to build the teleporter. Now, lastly, the last thing to mention as far as gameplay goes is that every once in a while, you'll get, you're already going to get normal quests in general from the occasional NPC. Might be something simple like, bring me two eggs and I'll replace it with a chicken because it's a wizard did it. I don't know.
Magic.
Turn an egg into a chicken. Just a variety of different quests you can take on, just give you side stuff. But in addition to that, the game runs on a real-time system. Like, not real-time, like, 9 o'clock is 9 o'clock, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a day night cycle. And at night, monsters will try to raid your base. So you are trying to keep your fort built up to either hold them off while you just kind of go do normal stuff, or you're going to actually fight them yourself and try to clear the base on your behalf. I rarely dealt too much with them. I didn't care a ton, but I also wasn't doing the best at the game. So take what I say there with a grain of salt. If I was at the base and saw monsters, I kicked their asses. If I wasn't at the base, I didn't care what happened. I just kind of kept moving. But the other thing that could happen is every couple of days or so, you might get a request from like a witch, basically. And they'll say, hey, we need you to fulfill this obligation to us. You know, maybe provide us with some sacrificial resources. And if you don't do it, something bad will happen. Basically, you better do it. Don't want to ignore them, or you will take a decent penalty. It could be light stuff, or it could be bad things to the point of like getting your base raised to the ground. So you want to be careful about that. But it also adds a bit of urgency in addition to your normal, like, you know, survival instincts bit. And honestly, though I didn't get to play around with this, to my understanding, there's also a sort of multiplayer component where other players online, because there's no way you can do this on a TV locally, but other players can get bases in the other regions, and then you can attack each other's bases as well to basically screw your friend out of getting to Valhalla. Why would you do that, though, you freaking monster? Man,
because you're a dick.
But that option is there. Exactly. It's like that Let It Die game where everybody's like, you know what I'm going to do? We're going to just fuck your base. Why would you do that? I'm working hard here. But, essentially, the game itself I found to be pretty enjoyable. As you've probably guessed from a number of other reviews I've done on this show, I have become strangely fond of the, you know, get assist, a basic assist, figure out the best way to manipulate it and exploit it and use it to power my way through to the end of the game. It's like a puzzle of sorts. And I like that kind of gameplay. Unfortunately, the only downside I had to it, though it wasn't enough to make me dislike the game, though, I will admit, it wouldn't dissuade me from buying it before having a chance to play it myself, is the animation. Watching the animation outright, it seems kind of stiff, and there's also like a weird slowness in some of the loading sequences. But when the game is being executed, the game feels right. It plays just fine. And I stopped caring about those levels of performance, like, oh man, my attacks look weird. And I started caring more about kill the damn zombie monster, the skeleton, and get his bones so I can then take the bones and crush him into bone meal and then get the gear. So it was doing its job. It got me, it took me beyond, oh God, can we go frustrated about the performance and more concerned about, I want to play the game. I'm enjoying the mechanics they put in here for me. And it's a meaty title too. Like, you're not going just, I mean, I guess if you're the type who's a savant at these titles, you'll probably come in and just kind of steamroll. You could, the potential's there, but I don't think you will. I think there's going to be a learning curve. You're going to come in and die a bit. So I'm expected to just kind of come in and just win the game. And I also think as a result of that, there's value in the cost.
Well, then for $15, what do you think?
I think it's a buy it if you're into like adventure clickish games. But if you're not, but you're interested in, like, you know, the Valhalla bit and the Norse gods or Norse Viking mythology, it's definitely a try.
And I got to piggyback off that and say, if you're not into crafting, you're not going to have a good time with this game.
Exactly. That's what I mean. That's what I was referring to with the whole like click adventure sort of thing. I keep thinking, when I think of click adventure, that's what my brain says, like crafting a bunch of stuff and mixing things up. But yeah, it's basically like, if you're not down with get resources, combine resources to get new thing and then enhance the ability to get better resources built from better things. Yeah, that's a hamster wheel you're not going to want to touch, because that is really what the game is.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I love the art style. I had to mention that before we move on.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing. It's like, the art style was great. It was just the animation that was messing with me. Like, it's like the difference between like those figures that you used to see in some games where they actually had the individual joints modeled. So like, hey, this is, oh, his lower arm is moving. Now his upper arm is moving. And just how stiff. Yeah, magic. It just looks stiff because of how they were animating all that stuff. And that's pretty much the vibe I got. But yeah, I agree, as far as the vision just looking at it, is a very nice looking game. It definitely captures the holy fuck, I'm in Norse hell. It does a great job of that. It's not brimstone, it ain't fire, but there's some nasty ass wolves running around and they seize.
Well, speaking of hell and nasty ass things, the next game to talk about is called Distraint Deluxe Edition, developed by Jesse McConan, published by Rattlelake Games. It released September 10th on PS4 and Vita, 11th on Xbox One, 13th on the Switch for $5.99. Our own actions can deeply affect others. Experience a unique psychological tale about a young man learning this truth as he deals with the consequences of his actions. Price will descend down a dark path, fully realizing his actions that has led him to immense regret. Cole, tell us about Distraint.
Distraint is one of those games where it embodies the phrase, they're just doing their job, but then it turns it into a gory, awful horror show. The game is pixel art style. It's a 2D side-scrolling puzzler type of game. But it does have horror elements. It's not particularly one that at any time while I was playing it, I was like, holy shit, this is scary. It was more psychological horror. And so it was like, holy shit, this is horrible.
Do you want to know what's not horrible? Ford Racing just came in, dropped 100 biddies.
Drop it, bitch!
Ford Racing.
Yes, Ford Racing 19. Thank you for your biddies. It is always good. And it was the Subway emote, too, so we get an extra 10 biddies.
Nice.
So awesome.
What's a biddy?
Biddies on Twitch. That means someone gave us $1.10.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Just for our stupid shit that we do on this show, people pay for it.
You said Patreon wouldn't be interesting.
We'll have to try. I'll look into it. Anyway, Distraint.
Anyway, so you play as a man named Price, and Price works for a company that has its tendrils in asset forfeiture, which is pretty fucking awful. Let's just say, like, in the grand scheme of shit jobs, kicking people out of their homes is pretty much top of the shit barrel.
Oh, yeah. And also it's also that equivalent of, like, doing it when they're not even home. Like, oh, hard day at work. What the fuck? The locks are dingling. Yeah,
that's not a job anybody really fucking wants. No. And yet Price is there, and he is trying to get a promotion to become a partner with the firm. That means he's got to do the really gritty shit if he wants to impress the three big bosses.
Well, yeah. Like,
so, go ahead.
I'm thinking like he doesn't want to do the job, but he wants to be the top dog of the shitty job. What are you doing, Price?
Price, if you play this game, you'll learn very quickly. Price doesn't make the best decisions.
Why did my mom name me Price?
I think that's one of the better storytelling aspects of the game, though. Like, he's doing a shitty job, and it would be very easy to hate the main character just off his job alone.
Yeah.
But then they kind of dial it back, and they go, yeah, he's trying to be the partner, get the partner at this big firm, but he's not, you know, shitting in high clover himself. He's got a leaky apartment, and his coffee maker never works. And his parents just invite themselves in whenever the fuck they want. So,
but
they don't
bring a coffee maker.
Well, they don't bring him good coffee.
Aren't they his dead parents, too?
Well, that's spoiler territory, Joe.
It's early in the game.
I wasn't going to out that.
It's early in the game, and they come right out and say it very early.
Yeah, but they bring coffee.
Dead. Because they're dead.
No, they're drinking yours.
Yeah, they
drink hell coffee.
But, you know.
Hell coffee.
You would think that at least it would be good and dark.
Yeah, it'd be dark rose to be very, get you jumping and jittery.
Maybe that's the problem with it. Maybe hell coffee is burnt.
Maybe.
It's too dark roasted and it's burnt and then it ain't no good. I don't know. I don't drink coffee. I don't know shit about it, so.
I like coffee. I love hell coffee. Anyway,
back to the strain. So because Price's situation is not so hot itself, it's a little easier to kind of like attach to him and feel sorry for him and want to see him through his quest. The thing is that, as I said, he's trying to get the top level position. So his assignments really suck. And those assignments are your progress through the game. You're going to be kicking out an elderly woman from her home. You're going to kick out a recluse who lives in the woods. You're going to kick out a drug addict. And by the time you get to the end of this game, you're like, do I even fucking deserve what's going to happen? And the answer
By the way you described the title, it sounds like it's a horrible situation.
Like, I couldn't decide if I felt sorry for the character or was like, nah, fuck you. You're just as cutthroat as everybody else. You asked for it. The interesting thing, though, is that going through the game, yeah, the main plot beats are kicking the people out of their houses and learning their stories. But there's a couple of other sequences that you go through that just kind of give you a little extra story into Price and his situation. And by the end of the game, like, you're never really quite sure. Like, he's a shitty person for kicking him out, but he also kind of did the best he could.
Yeah.
In some really gnarly circumstances, trying so hard not to give away one of the big spoilers. You know exactly the one I'm talking about, Joe.
I'm not saying anything.
So does it flow like an adventure game in the sense that you're just kind of gone through the motions of witnessing the tale, or are there scenarios where like you have to make decisions that will allow you to evict the person instead of getting caught and then thereby failing your mission?
No, you can't fail the missions. You just have to do it. That's the only way to progress through. But there are like puzzle elements. And unfortunately, it's been like a week since I played it. And I'm reading my notes and I'm just like, I don't remember that.
Evictions? What the hell is that?
I remember the evictions because they lead to some pretty gnarly shit. But, for example, there's one sequence where, When you're kicking out the drug addict, you have to go through the building and in order to get into doors that are locked, you have to get high on mushrooms first before the doors become available to you.
Wait, what? Kind of magic apartment complex is it?
The mushrooms, like the high runs out really quickly. Price has some tolerance.
or some cheap mushrooms.
Well, maybe, but them fuckers are gone very fast. So you better know exactly which door you're booking it for. And he's a little on the chunky side, so he don't move that fast. He's got short legs. So that's the funny part. There's literally an achievement for walking all the way back to one area when you don't have to. And then he's like, "Ooh, I have short legs."
Did he beat who's?
I didn't get that achievement.
No, it's an easy one. The whole game is easy. I mean,
it's Rattalaika.
Rattalaika. Although I will say it's not as quick as most of their titles. A lot of them you can knock out 15, 20 minutes and you don't even have to beat the whole game. At least with Distraint, you have to see it through to the end. But I will say that of all of their games, it was the one I was most invested in and wanted to see the end for.
Nice.
And I felt, even though I was like conflicted on whether or not I was happy with the ending, I felt it was a suitable ending. And it was good for a horror game. Yeah. Like, I don't know that it's necessarily what I wanted to have happen. I don't know that it wasn't what I wanted to have happen. But I'm okay with where it's at. And sometimes that's a hard, happy medium to hit with a psychological horror like that. Because you want to be brain fucked, but you don't want it to be predictable. Yeah. And I think they did a surprisingly good job balancing that out. I was really impressed by this game. I go into Rattalaika games and I'm like, yeah, something, you know, if it's one of the little platformer ones, I'm like, there's going to be 157 levels and you're only going to have to complete 20, and I'm going to just flow through it and be happy with what I can play until my hand hurts and call it a day. But this one, I was like, this is my shit.
Well, then for $6, what do you say?
It's an absolute buy it. Like, if you like psychological horror, which we all know is my fucking favorite.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that I would have even tiny bit complained about is, horror pixel art. But even in this one, like, they did a good job with it. It's not
it looks good. They look like Funko Pops.
Yeah, it's not, it's very stylized, but it's not like where they use the pixel art to kind of cover up the fact that they can't create art.
Yeah.
They did a good job and it looks good, and it was very unsettling and unnerving, and it's all the best parts of a horror game, and I was very happy.
Awesome. Well, let's keep the horror going with Kalina Legacy, developed and published by Chant 6 Studios. It released September 13th on Xbox One for $4.99. Alex wakes up in his grandmother's home alone and unsure of where everyone has gone. He begins escape, the feeling of someone or something watching him lingering on his mind. Facing the unknown, Alex must make it through the night and the house before he loses more than just his mind. As Pickle, my new cat, is purring on my lap, what do you think of Kalina?
Pickle, I want you to do me a favor first.
Huh?
I want you to repeat the price of this game.
$4.99.
When I went to look it up while I was making notes, I fully expected this to be a $30 or $40 game.
Really?
Absolutely. And by that point, I had put a couple of hours into it. I had spent far more time with it than was necessary. But, I absolutely fully expected Kalina to be a much more expensive game than what it is. It is a 3D, third person psychological horror with puzzle elements. There is some mild Alan Wake style combat that I'll get to in a minute, but the 3D aspect of the game with a cheap horror, you don't have high hopes.
That sounded horrible if you didn't realize you said horror.
Horror. I need to go get me another carrot chip, because every time I say horror, it sounds like whore. And I know that.
Get
and
a I'm cheap
trying
horror.
To be conscious of it.
Horror.
Proud.
Every time you play a cheap scary game, you realize that it's questionable, right? Like, nobody goes into a $5 scary game
expecting a world changer.
Right. It's not going to look great. And that's okay. You know what you spent your $5 on. But I was so surprised by Kalina, because I just didn't expect it to look that good. It's not flawless by any means, but it's very impressive, especially at its price point for the effort that's been put into it. I definitely expected a higher price. To top that off, used $5 scary games or $5 scary games. And you just don't expect a lot of in-depth storytelling in a game like that.
Yeah.
And yet Kalina just blows the roof off of it. You do have to dig through the game because a lot of the lore is hidden around as like notes and tomes and interactive things that you need to pick up. But I absolutely recommend reading everything that you pick up because the effort put into the storytelling and creating the backstory and laying out the ambiance and everything that just goes into this game, like, is so impressive. As I did say, gameplay wise, you play as Alex. Alex has gone to his grandmother's with his mother and his father. He has had a seemingly traumatic experience in the past, and his mother and his father have separated as a result of that, but they're all coming together as a big happy family to go check on grandma for reasons. Horror games.
Pickles farted. It is so bad.
Pickles is a horror game.
Oh, Pickle. What are we doing?
He's like, you love me. Pet me.
I'm sure we'll talk more about Pickle on the next episode.
But once they get to grandma's, this is actually the point in the game where like you wake up and take control of Alex and you discover that everybody else is missing. And that's never a good situation.
The wolf did it.
Yeah. There is like a hellhound in the game in one of the sections, and it's like it's literally a big flaming wolf just lurking around the whole area while you're trying to run around, solve puzzles. This wolf is just constantly circling around, and like he's attracted to the light, and of course everything you do involves your flashlight, so good luck.
Better than that a flashlight.
It is. And I was, did you notice how careful I was being to say yes. Flashlight?
Yes. I'm proud of you.
If the fox were attracted to a flashlight, then at least that would make a bit of sense too. I mean,
I mean, you do find it on the bedroom floor. So maybe the game is playing with you a little bit. But, the interesting thing with the flashlight is that it is your only weapon. But you actually change its abilities using special amulet glyphs. So once you find the amulet and then you start to solve different puzzles, you'll have the ability to say change to the glyph of light to eliminate dark vines, or change to the glyph of death to kill enemies. And seriously, make sure you always keep that glyph of death on, because the first time one of those motherfucking puppets comes wailing at you, therapy.
Where's the flashlight? Break it out.
I solved the puzzle and I'm just like casually walking around going, oh, there must not be any enemies. I don't, it's fine. I can just lurk around and look for the lore and I'm good. No. That puppety bitch come flying. They're mannequins. And they come flip-flopping down the hallway, flinging their little rubbery mannequin arms all over the place. And you're just like, I'm dead now. Thanks for the achievement. Rip.
They fight like shit. Dead fish.
But beyond that, that does lead me to the one thing that I want to fuss about in this game. This is a seemingly minor complaint, but guys, it's 2019. For the love of all that fucks, please give me autosave.
Oh, you got a manual save?
You have to manual save.
Well, that's gross. I will say, as one thing, it's like a weird divide there. Like, autosave is definitely more convenient. There's never denying that.
But there's like a weirdness to, like, when it comes to like horror games or games that involve that style of adventure or exploration, where it feels like when they do the autosave, it's like, okay, well, that means that if something kills me, if I get jump scared and murdered, the stakes are low. It autosaves the entrance, you know.
Yeah, it does increase the tension aspect, especially, like, as I said, when you're in the forest and that wolf is just looming around, that hellhound, and you know that he could just bebop up behind you while your back is turned to a corner trying to solve a puzzle. It increases the tension, but it's also, it takes some of the tension away, because if you do die and you go back, you're like, well, I know where fucking everything's at, and I know all the puzzle solutions. This just feels like forced replay.
That makes sense.
The other hitch with that is that there are three difficulties to the game. Playing on normal gives you unlimited saves anyway. So why not just let me have autosave on normal and then leave the save system for the more difficult, the higher difficulties?
That makes sense, yeah, because there's multiple difficulty levels. They can appease all audiences with that system.
Yeah, and later in the game, there are quite a few areas where you can easily get lost and be looping around. There's only one save point per area. So say the first place that you start off with is inside of Granny's house, and there's a save point in Granny's room, and that covers being in Granny's house, being in Granny's basement, first, second floor, all those, and being outside in the garden, in the shed, and in the greenhouse. That's a pretty good size area to cover with just one save point that's on the second floor of the house. Likewise, you go on later on, and there's an area where you're underground within a temple with just sprawling caves. And you can get lost so easily because it's a cave system. Everything is a round wall and wood floors.
Yeah.
Good luck. It's dark. You have a flashlight. Everything looks the same. And you're just wandering around like a jackass for 2 hours. That's why a game that has a 100% walkthrough on YouTube that takes an hour has taken me 6 today.
Holy because shit.
I wasn't using the guide. Oof. Because the guide didn't include the collectibles. And so I was like, well, the puzzles are easy enough. I don't need the guide. I just wanted it for collectible help when I was doing that on my own anyway. So I was like, whatever, I'll go into it. Yeah, apparently I should have used it so I knew where the enemies were going to be.
Nice.
Because I've spent a lot of time dying to dumb shit that and having to start all over again just because I got jumped. And I don't particularly mind the whole, there's an enemy here that wasn't there. And especially playing on normal, I mean, I had the unlimited saves anyway, but playing on normal, there's not as many enemies. Like, once you clear them out, they don't respawn, and there's usually only one or two in an area anyway. Like I said, the cave system might be the worst, and I think I walked into one room that had three, and I was like, well, that's a thing.
No.
The only other complaint that I would have beyond the save system is that even set up to higher sensitivity, your turning and your movement is kind of slow and janky. It doesn't work poorly. It does what it's supposed to do. It's just that you do it so sluggishly, and like you have such a wide turn radius for a human that actually evading anything coming at you is unnecessarily difficult. And then to add on to that, your flashlight, when you aim it at something, you have to pull the trigger, but it has a charge time before it actually damages them. And some enemies need to be damaged 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And you're having to try to evade them and charge and evade them and charge. And they're just knocking you around like you're a rag doll.
Nice.
So it's a little unfortunate that the combat is a little... It's just too stiff for its own good, even with, and everybody knows, I bitch all the time, I play with my sensitivity cranked to the nines. But I still couldn't move away in a timely enough manner that I wasn't dying sometimes just for things that were out of my control. Did feel a little unfair, but it happened so rarely, and I spent so much more of my time just casually exploring and looking around and solving the puzzles that I didn't mind it too bad. Like, it wasn't enough to put the game down and not play it, and everything else outweighed it, if that makes sense.
Well, then for $5, what do you think of it?
Normally, I would be like, it's a $5 horror game, and yeah, it's not the greatest, but fuck it, why not? And no, this time I'm like, no, I don't know why anybody wouldn't buy this. If you like horror, if you like relatively easy completions, if you are willing to use a guide and not wander around like a jackass and get jumped and lose your saves, then hey, go for it. Absolutely. Yeah, it could use a little polish. It's not flawless. I had occasional clipping, or one of the other things that kind of got to me was there's subtitles. There's a ton of accessibility options in this game. I was so impressed. Seriously, a $5 indie. But there were so many accessibility options. But the subtitles on normal are really super small. You can make them bigger, but I don't know why they're so small in the first place. And second, if you pause while there are characters speaking and then you unpause, there's no subtitles. You just have to wait until it hits another track that will start up the subtitles.
So minor fixes.
Yeah. Like, again, just seriously small polish type stuff. And for a $5 game, I'm not even that mad about it. Nice. I'd like to see them work on it. But hey, as it is, I'm impressed. It's a buy it.
Awesome.
Yay.
We're going to be adding Chris Taylor into the call right now. He's ready to go. So hopefully he will be. There he is. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, doing all right.
How's hey, Chris, going? Parnell's the laundry fairy. He's going to do your laundry. Yeah.
Where is fantastic.
He's just decided that he's so nice that he's going to come do the laundry for everybody on SML.
That's a lie and expensive.
I would never lie. Does this voice sound like it could lie to you?
Oh, yes. You told us you had baking soda, but you actually had baking soda. That was a huge lie. Huge.
That was a misunderstanding.
Oh, that's in my taste buds. I was craving it. And now,
Oh man! So now that everyone's here, Chris, first off, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, actually. Doing some laundry too.
See, yeah. Everyone's doing laundry today.
It's the time.
Parnell is slacking. We're having to do our own laundry, and it's so depressing.
The horror.
Say that again. No, the horror.
The horror. The horror. The horror.
Chris, how do you say horror?
Horror?
Okay.
How does Frank Reynolds say
horror? That's a cheap horror.
All right, so we got three more games to talk about. Two from Chris, one from Purnell. Who wants to go next?
Me, because I got to drop off afterwards and get my damn laundry.
Chris, you good sitting through a review?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, next game to talk about is called Chop, developed by Claws Up Games, published by Cubic Games, released September 13th on the Switch for $9.99. Chop is a 2D arena fighting game with a lot of gore and fast-paced action. Swords will fly, bodies will be chopped, friendships will break. Purnell, how many friends did you lose?
Unfortunately, a few, because I told all my friends that there would be a cooking mini game in this. There was going to be food involved, and there was not. There was a lot of disappointment there. But once I got past that little issue, I came to realize that this was one of those scenarios where a game played out in a way that I didn't expect it to. And I ended up enjoying it. So I'm just going to flat out state, I wasn't a big fan of the art style. And I'm stating that specifically because of the fact that I don't think the art style should detract a person from wanting to try this game. Because once I utilized the game for what it was, I realized that I quite enjoyed it. But I should actually explain what the hell the game is instead of rambling about this side tidbit. So let's get down to business. In the game Chopped, you are one of four different avatars. And your goal in this arena combat game or at least the main mood, is to do two things. One, kill one of your opponents, at which point a portal will open up on the map. And then, before getting killed by someone else, including the guy you just killed, you need to get your avatar to that portal and vacate the stage. So the way you can kill your opponents is through one of two methods. If you press, there's one button you can press, which will allow you to do like a sort of melee dash. And when you perform that melee dash, you will kind of run through the enemy and just kind of kill him if you pass through him. Think of it kind of like how Towerfall worked with the arrow or whatever. Now, the other method you can utilize, you can press one of the trigger buttons and it will allow you to take your sword weapon and throw it. Just throw it. And you can impale enemies with it. If you throw the weapon and you miss, you have to actually go and pick up the sword again before you can take another shot at throwing it. So you can't just willingly throw your sword around because you're going to come to regret it if you do. There's a grapple move that comes into play in the event that you lose the sword, but you want the sword. That's your bread and butter for doing some stealthy kills. In addition to the way I just described murders taking place, each character also comes with their own individual perk, which will allow you to utilize their sword differently. For example, my favorite character is one where when you press the trigger button, you can control the sword with the crosshair, with the controller. So I can just basically tell the sword, go up, zigzag, go in a circle, and then stab that guy when he didn't see it coming. Of course, it leaves me vulnerable, so you don't want to just sit there the whole time just playing with your sword. You got to actually get involved. You know how I was going there. And there are a couple other ones, too. Like, there's one where the guy gets two swords, which means he gets twice the opportunity to throw and take guys out. And there was another guy who he could throw the sword and teleport to it. And lastly, it was a guy who he would throw the sword and he can call it back. Which means not only does he not have to chase after his weapon, but he can kill somebody with the sword when it's coming back to him. So I feel like every character's ability is fairly balanced in a sense where there's no really overpowered guy. There's like each guy has an ability that you can utilize to take the advantage out on other players. So depending on the situation, of course. Now, as you play the game and go through a series, each time you get through a set of matches, you'll unlock more arenas to fight in. And there are a decent number of stages. There's at least over like 16 or so. There's a lot of levels in this game to mess around with. So I don't really foresee being bored of the stage choices. However, outside of the main mode, there are two other modes. And one of them is just a generic, you know, everybody just be the last man standing, kill everybody mode, which, given the scope of this game, I feel like, my opinion, during my sessions anyway, I felt like it was almost a disservice to the game to even bother with deathmatch. Because deathmatch is in everything, but this game did something different, and I loved it. The other side game that they had was a sort of skull-catching game, a skull-collecting. So think of it like coin mode in Smash Bros., where when you kill an opponent, they'll drop a bunch of skulls, and you can pick those skulls up and further bolster your skull inventory. And then you have to also take those skulls to your portal that opens up after you kill a guy to actually dump them off and hold them for points at the end of the level. And when the last man is standing, they'll tally up how many skulls you got. And if you have 50 skulls, you win the match. Otherwise, they'll go on to the next round and you can do it again. Again, a very enjoyable mode and an enjoyable time. And the second is my second favorite mode, but of course, the main one being the best. Now, as far as down things go, the thing that could be potentially bad about this game, it really isn't much, if any. I would like there to be some more characters. Hopefully, like maybe there'll be some characters coming later on through like some free updates or something. Because it'd always be nice to get some more options available for characters to use. But even the fort they start you with is enough to get a good party going. And other than that, I wish I had a better understanding of how the AI is, because if you play the game, you can turn AI characters on, but depending on the mode, you don't want to go too low on the intelligence. So, like, if you're doing the normal mode I mentioned where you kill the guy and then go to the portal, if you set the AI to, like, 2, you're going to be sitting there for a while waiting for them to wrap up if you're the first to exit the stage, because they're pretty dumb. But
yeah, it's like that on 5, Smash Brothers, too.
Yeah, exactly. And like, but it has like an extra level of like, come on, specifically because it's not just kill the guy. Now it's like, not only do you have to kill the guy, but why is he hanging on the ceiling? The portal's right there. Just get inside.
So you want them to finish. You want them to finish. Are you yelling at them to chop chop?
Oh, God. Well, the double sword guy anyway. Yeah, he has to. But yeah, it's just, it's a quality game. I mean, honestly, this game could have easily been. No one groaned
at that.
No, I didn't. I went along with that. I mentioned the double sword. See, I went along with it, man. I'm a professional. I'm shit. Roll with them punches. But, to me, I feel like this game could have very easily been just another ho-hum, hey, last man standing, beat your friends up game on the Switch. Because as we all know, there are a plethora of those right now. But
there's your favorite word, Cole.
Yes, it's such a good word.
Did you know the final boss of Kid Chameleon's name is Plethora?
Really?
I believe so. I'll have to double check later, but I'm fairly positive because that's where I learned the word from Kid Chameleon.
Wow.
So, and I was like, wonder what that is. Oh, wow, I like this word.
Chris, did you play Kid Chameleon?
No, but I was going to say I'm more of a Myriad guy myself.
Oh, Myriad of options, yeah.
Right? Plethora is good, but Myriad.
There's Cole, your myriad thoughts on Myriad?
Myriad's okay, but there's just something about Plethora.
There are a myriad of variations on the word Plethora. Mm-hmm.
It sounds weird if you say it Plethora.
It does. I don't like when people say Plethora. It's Plethora.
I read the word a long time before I ever heard it spoken, so I had it like this weird pronunciation in my head for like a lot of my youth.
Oh, geez. I do that with a lot of words. Like when I say a big word on the podcast and I have to stop and be like, did I actually pronounce that properly or did I redneck it?
Well, you got to admit, Plethora sounds like it's a lot more metal. The Plethora versus the Plethora.
It sounds like a body part.
Yeah, yes.
Plethora.
Doctor said he's got to have to operate on my plethora.
Do. Well, it doesn't exist, so you should be safe. But unfortunately, I'm still going to collect my cut. Give me my money.
Oh, jeez.
There you go.
Oh, mercy.
Getting fleeced over a fictional plethora.
That's how they get you, man. They just want that money. They don't care if it makes sense or not. Pony up.
Yeah.
Doctor, I'm here about my tibula fibula. Well, it could be both or either. I don't care. Just give me my money. $25 copay, bitch. Give me.
Tibula? I was just thinking of tibula rasa now. I don't know why. That just popped right into my head.
I love how the guy in the company you get a game is like, come on, man, tell us about the game.
Like, tell us about the claws up games are like pissed right now. It's like, why are you talking about plethora? Plethora. I don't know how the word is anymore. You guys are confusing me.
Just tell us deets. Give us the skinny mini.
Your show sucks. I'm not subscribing to your Patreon. Next they're going to find out
they've been pronouncing all wrong.
But there are a plethora of games like this out on the Switch, but I do feel as though this game is different enough in the style of which it is played to carve its own niche. Carve its own niche into the genre and be worthy of a place on your memory card. It is a fun time, and it's actually kind of nice to get those yelling matches in when you kill the guy and you run along the ceiling to go to your portal. And even though you get to the portal, there's like a split second between getting to it and actually vacating. So someone can still get you with a stealth kill when you think you made it out. So that gets to be pretty interesting when that happens. Both being the killed, which means you get pissed, and being the guy who did the killing, which makes you feel giddy.
Dark Meek is saying it's niche, not niche. I've heard it both ways.
I was trying not to be pedantic.
It's I've pedantic. Heard it I've heard it both ways. So I just it's a niche or niche or niche or noosh. Probably good niche.
It's Nietzsche, the guy who wrote that book.
Nietzsche and Scratchy? Oh, yeah, I love that pair.
Oh, God. Well, Purnell, $10 on Chop. What do you think of it?
I think it's a quality buy, man. I had a great time playing it, and this is definitely going to find a nice place alongside games like Crawl and, not so much Spelunky, though, but, basically just games of that nature that allow me to just kind of break it out for quick sessions with my friends and scream at each other. It's a good time.
Awesome. Sounds good. Purnell, I guess you're heading out now, right?
Yes, right. I gotta be my own laundry fairy for a bit before I start factoring other people into my plans.
Nice. Well, you go do your thing, and we are going to continue on with the show.
All right, guys. You have yourselves a wonderful evening, and it was a pleasure hanging out with you and everyone in the chat as well.
Awesome. Do you have any final words?
Honestly, exercise, but if you do, definitely eat before you do, because otherwise you'll feel like I do right now, which is shit. Oh, God. It's these I didn't shit my pants. There you go.
Good stuff. All right, Pernell, you have yourself a good one.
You too, man. I'll see you.
Bye, Pernell.
See ya.
Cole, you going to stick around?
Technically should not.
No, you're going to head out?
Yeah, I should. I need to go to bed. I got to be up in a couple hours.
Chris, it's just going to be you and me for the last two.
Oh, my God.
Good luck, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Cole, you got any final words?
I already did it. I said good luck to Chris.
Oh, hey, I'll take that.
All right. See you, Cole.
Woo, bye. Woo.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called NASCAR Heat 4. Code provided for free from 704 Games for the purpose of this review. That's how it is with every game, but they want us to specify on this one. So we're specifying. We got this baby for free to review it. Developed by Monster Games, published by 704 Games, released September 13th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. Looking and sounding better than ever with updated visual graphics and engine audio, race across 38 tracks in all three NASCAR National Series, plus fan favorite, the Extreme Dirt Tour. More unique and competitive than before with new AI controls, drafting features, a new track map, unlockable paint schemes, and enhanced career mode. Chris, tell us about NASCAR Heat 4.
Oh, boy. I feel like you already pretty much told us all about it. That's everything there is to say.
No, all right. Well, then $50.
Oh, wait. Well, I got it for free from 704 Games, as you know.
It was provided to us for free for the purpose of this review.
Provided to us for free. There is in no way my money going to NASCAR or 704 Games. I am legally obligated to say.
Yes, but your money should go to NASCAR and 704 Games and Monster Games to check out the game, right?
Yeah, of course, totally. Okay, so NASCAR Heat 4. Well, I'm not super familiar with the NASCAR Heat series, so I had to look at reviews of the previous games and things like that. And it seems like mostly it really what it is a facelift kind of, you know, improved graphics and sound and better racer AI, which is interesting. They seem to have made an effort to reduce the amount of, I guess what they call, freight training, where, you know, when you go to race in the correct spot, that's where everyone else goes to, so you just end up, like, you know, basically in traffic when you're supposed to be racing. So they do kind of scatter a little bit more, which is nice. That's always been a problem I've had with NASCAR style games. My games have always been more in the like Mario Kart and Excite Truck type of thing where, you know, you're just going completely nuts because it's a video game. But as far as like an actual racing simulation, this is of course the best one I've played in recent years for sure. Given that I actually haven't been following the NASCAR series at all. But, yeah, so what it is...
I don't follow NASCAR either, but I love the NASCAR games. They're just so much fun to play.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting towards, is that it really is a very good racing game. Like, you know, just the way it feels in your hands, the way things control. Having not played, like, a proper NASCAR game in quite a few years, it's, like, very much improved over what I can remember. So, yeah, like, basically, you can do a career mode, of course. You can do a quick race. You can do online races. Of course, I did a career mode, created my own custom race car driver named Alan Racist. the last name is because... I know. People should know I'm notorious for names. But, I mean, he's called that because he loves racing. That's why he's Alan Racist.
Yeah, someone who loves racing is a racist.
Yeah, he has a mustache and a mullet and a bright pink cap. And I found out, though, like when I was coming up with this whole color scheme, that you can't actually change the colors of their clothes, just the hat. So he ended up with like 6 different colors on his head, and then they none of them corresponded with the rest of his outfit. And I was like, Alan. And so, of course, I had to put those like eye-jarring like colors on my car, which is one thing that I actually went to the NASCAR online like website, whatever, about this game. And one of the things they were bragging about is like, now players can choose any number between 0 and 99 to put on their car. And I was like, man, what have they been? They've been really tightening the reins on that one, huh?
Well, I think so, it was an issue where they didn't want you picking a number that's already used in NASCAR.
Yeah, I picked that most cursed of numbers, 76. So that's that's what my chat suggested. I actually streamed this game, by the way. If anybody wants to check out, I'm Liar Exaggerate. I just typed LOL into the chat, and I do stream. And I streamed this game a little while ago, so it's in my highlights or my previous streams. Anyways, so. Yeah, so like basically you can start your career mode where you can start racing and, you know, you can join a team if you're good. Of course, the better you race, the better teams you can join up. As you win more races, better teams start contacting you. And then at the end of the season, you can opt to join a nicer team. And of course, the benefit to that is the prestige and, of course, also better cash money payouts, which, of course, you get cash money for winning races, and I had trouble figuring out where that cash is supposed to go. I'm like getting up into the 6 digits now, and I'm like, I want to spend my money. Where do I get booster packs? Where do I get? And I guess it just turns out you kind of race the car that they give you, and you're responsible for the paint job if it's your car. But yeah, sometimes it's like they need you to drive number 44 in the next whatever. Like, I can't remember the names of any of these races. Apparently they're all authentic except for the extreme dirt one. I think that's unique to the game.
No, I'm pretty sure it's real. I think they're all real. Oh, I think everything in the game except for you is real.
Except for Alan Racist.
Alan Racist.
He lives on in our hearts. anyways.
Hearts of the young.
The hearts of the young and old. Anybody who remembers the name stares wistfully out the window, draws the curtains. Anyways, yeah, so, you know, besides career, you know, like I say, you can join different teams and things like that. And then you can also create your own team if you wish. And I think that's where the money goes. That tends to go into like the various simulation aspects of that actual thing. I couldn't
hiring employees and, you know, working on technology for your vehicle and upgrades and everything else. That's where all the money stuff goes.
Yes. So that's something to strive toward, of course. And, yeah, kind of what I like about it is that, like, while you're in between races in your career, like, there's different things that just sort of pop up, like hot seat races. So you go to a different track and you might be driving a pickup truck or, like, an actual stock car or, like, the dirt cars that I guess drive on the dirt roads, whatever they're called. Somebody in my chat knew what everything was and was, like, saying, and I was like, I'm not going to remember any of this for the review. But ultimately, yeah, like what it comes down to is just winning those races and getting onto the better teams and, you know, perchance to create your own team. And my favorite part, trash talking people on social media.
Hell yeah.
So the game between sets of races, you'll end up actually having people talk about you on Twitter, and they'll have a little bit of a and these are all real NASCAR drivers, by the way. They'll either be saying like nice things about you, or if you like bumped them in the race or something, they'll be like, Alan Races bumped me, I don't think he's very nice at all.
These are all like racer, you gotta race clean.
Yeah, it's all stuff like if you've ever seen a retail like customer service like training tape, like it's those kind of responses, because obviously they can't say anything truly inflammatory.
This son of a bitch wrecked. I was waiting. Yeah. I went after Tony Stewart in the dirt tour like no other. I hate Tony Stewart. My old stepdad was a huge Tony Stewart fan, so fuck Tony Stewart. And my goal was to run him into the wall every chance I got. And nice. I was waiting for like a tweet from Tony Stewart, like, you motherfucker, will you stop messing? It just didn't come. It's not an M-rated game. So,
yeah. And I mean, plus that other thing is that, you know, even though it's, dialogue that was written by somebody else. It's like you can't put that inflammatory dialogue next to an actual professional who has a career. Could you imagine being that razor, though? It's like, you know, what was the guy's name that you hate?
Tony Stewart.
Tony Stewart. Yeah, imagine being actual Tony Stewart and somebody being like, sir, or like, you know, oh, they're, you're in trouble now because a video game version of you is calling people motherfuckers. And he's like, what? Then yeah, anyway. So yeah, social media trash
talk. Let them run over more drivers.
Yeah, exactly.
Piece of
now,
shit.
I mean, all that really affects is that, well, one, of course, if you get somebody like truly pissed off at you, you get an achievement. So that's an easy trophy. But, you know, sometimes if you are going to join a group, it'll be like, requires reputation of one or something like that, which, of course, your reputation rating goes up as more racers, more racists consider you to be a pal. So, you know, I don't know what the ultimate goal is there. I guess, again, it's just to get into the best team possible. So, yeah, like, the actual races break down into three different sections per race. So you have your practice run with a couple of other cars where basically you just try to get the time underneath the goal. And then you do the actual prepare to qualify thing, which I kept quoting the... what was it called? What's that Atari game? Never mind. Anyway, the one that says, prepare to qualify. In that crude digitized voice. And, yeah, exactly. And, pole position. Thank you. The chat has my back on that one.
Nice.
F1 pole position.
Thanks, Prime.
And then once you get your position after you qualify for it, then you start there in the race. And so, of course, you want to get in the best position possible because, of course, all the cars pretty much run at the exact same speed. So you just have to, like, utilize the whole, like, getting onto the outside and then rolling kind of down the hill or whatever to get as fast as you can. But, yeah, so besides that, you can, of course, choose to just do a quick race in one of the, I think it was 38 tracks that they said they had.
Yep.
And, then it has actually a set of like specific challenges that you can try and accomplish, including one that's changed monthly. And the one like for September, for instance, is where they put you on a track with 24 cars and within one lap you have to get to first place. And they're like, we're going to create two major wrecks in this course. So the idea is to like take over first place, but not get caught up in these massive car pileups. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And like I said, of course, you can do the online thing, which is interesting. It's very bare bones in the sense of like, I mean, obviously there's like rankings and things like that. I mean, it's actually an esport, right? NASCAR racing games.
But, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure it is.
Yeah. But anyways,
everything's so, like, an esport.
Yeah, exactly. So it's got that, but like on the online mode, which in rare form I actually tried out. I usually don't try out the online stuff. But yeah, I found out that basically when you join a lobby, like it basically just instead of giving you a practice or qualifying round, it just puts you into a place based on how quickly you join the lobby. So if you're like, you know, obviously then you want to find the rooms that have the least amount of people at the time or get them as they first show up so that you can get, you know, second place or whatever. But it was, you know, that's interesting anyway. But, yeah, all this to say, there's of course tons of DLC and, different things like that. And apparently, there's like, if you pre-order the game or something like, or if you pre-ordered it or it's available somehow, you can play as like Jeff Gordon, who I didn't know was still racing.
I don't think he is. I think it's just like a legacy thing. And that's for, I believe, the season pass.
Oh,
includes
okay.
The Jeff Gordon content or the deluxe edition of the game.
Gotcha. You gotta pay that money if you want Jeff Gordon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so actually, you know, I found it really fun. The music can mostly all go to hell. It's all licensed tracks from country and rock artists I've never heard of.
It's generic butt rock, and I love generic butt rock, so I was really happy with the soundtrack.
That's totally fine. You know, opinions differ.
Yeah.
And actually, you can choose what music you want to play if you get first place, and... I will say that I actually found the perfect song, and it's an old-timey piano rag.
I loved seeing you win a race.
Alan Racist. Anyway, so yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I had a great time. It was all laughs, like on my stream. And then when I went back to it today without the internet watching, I actually like really zoned out and just started doing race after race. This game really hooks you in. And yeah, as far as like any kind of official racing game that I've played that's like actually serious, this one looks the best and it plays the best. So I definitely think it's a really good one to get.
Awesome. And to piggyback off of what you said, there are a lot of assists in the game. If you're new to the racing games, they have a lot of different driving assists that you could play with. There were times like there's an assist that helps keep you away from slamming into the wall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's
it's insane how casual friendly this game is. It's really approachable.
Yeah, and like, you know, now that we're in the age of like the sort of like squishy bumper, you know, triggers where like you can actually have a variable like acceleration, like that really comes in handy. Yeah, this game, like in my, you know, Mario Kart playing hands, like I actually was able to learn to acclimate to this one really quickly, which normally takes me a long time with these more persnickety racing games. So yeah, very, very casual friendly.
Well, then $50 on it. What do you think of NASCAR Heat 4, which was provided to us for free from 704 Games for the purpose of this review?
For the purpose of this review, this was provided for us for free from 704 Games. But I think that you folks who didn't get it for free should buy it.
I agree. It's a lot of fun. I did my yearly. I have a tradition with these NASCAR games since I've covered in previous years and I helped cover it this year as well. I have a tradition that every year I do a full length, 100% length race.
Nice.
So if something is like 500 laps, I do 500. I always do one every year. I do a full length race.
Nice.
And, I did it again this year and I had fun with it.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, and that's one thing that they purport to have added to this one versus 3 is that now those long-ass races have day-night cycles.
Yeah.
So you can actually see like the kind of time go by. You know, you can start in the afternoon and end up in the evening in-game. So I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, racing at night's pretty cool, too. So
day-night cycles, which, of course, are a new innovation provided to us by Dragon Quest II. But it's nice to see NASCAR Heat for like finally picking it up.
Nice. Well, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Jet Cave Adventure, developed and published by 7 Levels, released September 17th on the Switch for $19.99. Meet Cave, the jet-powered caveman, a has-been chief banished by his own tribe. He stumbles upon a jetpack. The device turns him into the only prehistoric man who stands a chance against the alien invader, a rather unlikable guy from the sky who will readily kick off a disastrous volcanic eruption just so he could repair his spaceship. Chris, what the hell is Jet Cave Adventure?
What the hell? For one, I like that the caveman's name is Cave with a K versus a C. It's just like calling yourself House, but with like a Z.
House.
House. My name is House. Well, actually, I guess they did do a whole medical procedural drama out of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, not with the Z, but... So yeah, Jet Cave Adventure. So you are a caveman, and that it's a caveman platformer, which, funny enough, is a weird subgenre that I actually really enjoy. Ever since I played Joe and Mac as a kid and like, you know, moved that on to like Congo's Caper and Bonk's Adventure and things like that. So I actually do have a bit of a history playing caveman games, and this one is actually a really spiffy update on that whole formula. Now, a lot of people compare it to Donkey Kong Country, which I think is I think that's a little too basic, like a little too easy. It is a platformer in that vein. It's 2.5D, of course, so you got, you know, your 3D models going across a 2D thing. So it's not like the big cartoony graphics of like a Joe and Mac or anything like that. However, The main thrust of the game is that, you know, of course you have your running and jumping and, you know, hanging onto ledges and doing wall jumps on specific walls only and hitting things with your club. And then you have your three Zelda-style hearts, which give you three hits. And the merciful thing about it is if you fall into the bottomless pit, it only just takes away a heart. So you actually don't, like, do the thing where you have to start the level over again constantly.
That's good.
Until you know, fall enough. And then, you know, there's multiple checkpoints in most of the stages. So you fight enemies and you collect food points, which once you get food points, you can then at any point use, you know, like they're represented by chicken legs. And once you fill one up, then that will allow you to manually refill a heart if you get a hit. So you actually do have other stuff that you can do. You also collect little seashells, and those work as currency in the game, so you can actually buy stuff in the shop. All this to say, the main, like, thrust of it, if you will, is the jetpack, which the opening story kind of shows you. It's just it's a chief of a caveman tribe that gets kicked out for reasons unknown, or at least I couldn't really figure it out. I don't know, maybe he was crushing grapes and fermenting them, and people didn't realize he was making wine. They just thought he was wasting grapes, something like that. Anyways, he gets kicked out, and then upon getting kicked out, he runs into a spaceman who has just crashed his spaceship, and after a confrontation, you can see, like, the game has no actual words in it in terms of, like, the stories and stuff. It's just, like, all illustrated kind of stuff. So you can see that the guy sees the volcano in the background and he decides that that's his fuel source. So he flies off and then leaves behind his jetpack, which your guy figures out how to use. And so the actual jetpack acts as, several different things. It's, for one, it allows you to hover in midair, once you jump. So it kind of acts like a double jump. And then there's another one where you basically push the trigger, the R trigger button, and it will allow you to kind of, like, move an arrow around to slingshot your guy, basically to propulse yourself into a direction really fast. All of this, of course, this does things like crashing through breakable walls, knocking over platforms that, you know, you can then walk across, just making your jumps, like, extra long. And so the whole game is, like, basically just a whole bunch of different elaborate setups, and they actually do get really elaborate. That utilize the jetpack and, like, the regular platforming stuff. The battles are never too hard, and you're given plenty of weapons to deal with them. Of course, you're kind of club, and then you get to throw stones at them as well, but those are limited, but you can purchase them in the shop. And then, yeah, like, every so often you have things like a boss fight. You might fight may or may not fight, like, a boss enemy at the end of the stage. Sometimes they actually throw in a little thing like they have a chase sequence where you have to outrun a mammoth across a bunch of platforming stuff. They have one where you get a hang glider and you get to actually do some kind of Super Mario World style, like, hang gliding, like trying to catch the wind and nice. Pick up more bonuses. And although I didn't see this myself, I read somewhere that there's even a vertical scrolling section. And I'm like, ooh, that reminds me of the Adventures of Dino Ricky on the NES, which is one of the first games I ever played.
I missed that game.
So I hated it when I was a kid because I didn't understand shooters, because it's a shooter that occurs on the ground. It's actually really good. It's a really good game. You basically, you know, get through all these stages and stuff, and, you know, the whole thing is, it's very charming. It, you know, feels very vibrant, like the enemies feel very alive. There's touches of humor here and there. Like, I do like that when you defeat a dinosaur, for instance, they explode into a bunch of, like, bones that are clearly already petrified. So they just look like museum bones that scatter around. And probably my favorite gag is when you purchase an upgrade to your club, it basically gives you longer reach. And that is illustrated in the game by the club being shown with a rock tied to it, like to the end to give it more of a, yeah, it just, it's really funny to me how that works. But yeah, it's a charming game. It's, it feels really solid. Like it almost feels like a Ninja Gaiden style game, just as much jumping and climbing and like wall jumping and jetpacking as you're doing. Like it actually does get really, the action gets pretty cool and intense. The one thing that's a little bit weird about it is that literally the first three entire levels are all tutorial levels.
Oh, geez.
There's so much move that you have, and the game is just like, we're not going to stop until you learn every single one of them. But again, I really love it for the gimmicks that it throws your way every now and then. And apart from that, it just felt really solid. There's hardly any music. It's mostly just like very simple stuff, like just clanging a couple of hand drums, or like there's a little bit of a nose flute sound in one of the stages, and then one of them has a has some sounds like mandolin strumming. I'm not even sure, maybe ukulele. But yeah, you know, the whole thing has kind of a jungle vibe, so it all feels appropriate, but there's no like stellar soundtrack to this thing or anything. But graphically it looks really nice, so you know, giving it points for that.
Cool. Well, $20 on Jet Cave Adventure. What do you think of it?
$20. I mean, you know, that's usually a difficult one to like try and push on a digital only kind of game like this. But I think that the quality is there. It definitely has enough levels. I think the number is 36 levels, and they're meaty. They're very long levels. And like I said, a lot of them contain bosses either halfway or at the end. And it does have replayability. There's collectibles as well as different achievements that you can do per stage. So, you know, it's all there. As far as like a $20 game goes, like it's a solid amount of content. And like I said, it looks and plays really, really nicely. I'm not sure it's going to, you know, make anybody's, you know, top five or whatever, like a Shovel Knight or a Celeste, but I quite enjoyed it. And as a fan of caveman games, I really felt like it was up there.
So it got your caveman stamp of approval?
It did. Yes.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on, chatting about these games. There's one more game to talk about after you head out. So do you have any final words before we move on?
Just make sure that you use an extra dryer sheet when you're got your laundry in the dryer there. Like, one almost never does it.
Yeah, never does.
Yeah, just use two, man. Live your life.
All right, and final game to talk about tonight is called Discontinued, developed by Post Beta and Blue Knight Games, published by Post Beta, released June 10th on Steam for $7.99 and is compatible with the Vive, Rift, and Valve Index. Discontinued is a competitive VR room-scale disc-throwing game experience with over 0x2000 levels. Your goal is to survive your chosen generated synthwave cyberpunk-style parkour and set a new high score. Are you ready for this challenge? Checking this one out. It's been a while, but Chris Serrani, you're back. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. It's near the end of the show. It's been a fun one, so I'm ready to wrap things up and get this over with.
Wrap things up and get all the cats off you?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, I hear you got a new fun one, and it sure likes being on you all the time.
Yeah. Pickle is unique.
Well, you know what else is unique?
This game?
Yeah, it's definitely a fun one in many, many different ways. So
that segue was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I do what I can in my head.
That was an SML level segue. That is the kind of high quality segues we go for on this show.
Well, you know, I try, Joe, just for you.
So how's Discontinue?
So my first impressions, well, first of all, I had some fun computer troubles getting to the point of running it because I hadn't ran my Oculus in forever, but that's a whole nother story. But after getting everything set up, got the game started up, and, like kind of my initial thoughts, like the game environment was pretty nicely rendered. I thought it was optimized nicely. You know, the high contrast vector graphics that they were kind of going for, I think really played out well. And I'm sure a lot of people have sort of had that, hey, this is a real Tron-like feel to it. And yeah, it does. It's kind of like, hey, I sort of feel like I'm in that sort of Tron-esque world where, you know, I guess with how all those graphics play out, it's like, this is kind of like being in the movie in a way. Like, this is sort of cool. One thing I did run into right away that I think is maybe one of the issues I had with some playability with the game was that my play space for VR is definitely not up to par. I'm probably kind of in like a 4x3 foot area. And I definitely recommend having a much larger space for this game.
How much shit did you break punching it?
It's not that I broke anything. It's because I thankfully had that kind of invisible barrier thing set up, so it warned me all the time. But it's like slight movements, and I was setting off the barrier. I'm like, oh, this is not good. But, I mean, despite that issue, it was playable in that method, but... it could have been better. Audio-wise, things didn't really seem distracting to me. Like, there were some decent sound effects. The music was kind of fitting for the environment, too. So I guess to kind of start off here, let's see. Checking my notes here. Starting off in the game, the menu that's right in front of you has, like, these different kind of practice arenas you can go into. And, you know, being new to the game, I'm like, okay, well, let's try these out. And they didn't quite make sense right away because there was no, a voice guiding you through it. You know, like, welcome to the practice arena. You should pick up your desk and throw it like this. So instead, it's like just kind of thrown in there and, oh, okay, I guess I'll try doing this. Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Oh, I'm not doing very well.
That's something we ran into with the game Super Dodgeball Beats, where it seemed like the practice section had zero tutorial and all the tutorial stuff was in the campaign.
Yep. And actually, so the only kind of tutorial thing that's in the game is when you're standing at the main menu and you look down, there's like a little text bar in there that just kind of cycles through some hints, like, throw the discs like you're throwing a frisbee, try throwing backhanded, and it'll just kind of go through those things slowly. And it's like, well, this could maybe be a little bit more efficient with how they're trying to explain stuff, because if you're like me and you really suck at throwing frisbees, any help I can get, just any help, I think would be kind of an improvement, at least in that aspect of the game. So kind of going along with that, once trying to actually play the game, aiming and throwing didn't seem to have a lot of consistency or accuracy. And I did improve the more I played it. I think all in all, like, I've got about an hour of playtime in right now, which is a lot of cursing and frustration initially, but I got better, I swear. So I think one thought I had for maybe an improvement is maybe kind of an aiming system with some maybe difficulty advances you could do. Like, let's say if you put it on like an easy aim mode or something, maybe it would kind of help auto aim for targets, and then you could, you know, progressively make it more difficult to where it depended on your skill. Because with how the aiming was working, it's like I would try and throw a disc, it would just shoot way up high. I would try and aim lower and do it again, it would still shoot up way too high, and I'm like, okay, really got to figure this out. And in that last playthrough I did actually improve a bit. And I think some of this might depend on my small play space, where maybe if I had a lot more room to do just a good normal arm swing, maybe that's kind of what the controls are going for.
Yeah.
So but that being said, like, it definitely proves to be a good challenge. And the more I kind of got into it, the more fun it started to get, and I just kind of wanted to keep going, aside from breaking a sweat and stuff.
Sweating? Oh my god, I'm fat. I know what that's all about.
Yeah, and it's, once you start sweating in a VR headset, it's fresh.
It always fogs up the lens when I start sweating on PSVR.
Yeah, and actually the worst one for me is when I try and shuffle my head a little bit and I accidentally, like, somehow my face hits the lenses and I'm like,
oh, and you smear the sweat on it. Ugh.
I'm like, well, I guess I'm stopping for a minute or two.
Oh, that ruined my day.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, my overall thoughts for the game is that, like, it really is a good challenge. I think one thing you got to go into is just maybe expect to have a little frustration at first, but, you know, just work through it. Keep trying. At least start and stop a few times just to give yourself a break. Like I said, that last time that I played, it's like I just kind of went into it, and it was maybe a little more natural with some of the throwing I was doing. I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of get this now. I'm able to throw these things a little quicker, and oh my God, I'm further than I was before. Let's keep going. And I died. And I do think one nice thing about like the Steam platform and everything is maybe ease of updates for the developer. So there are so many things that I think could definitely make this game like even better and better and better over time. If the developer's listening to like reviews and such, which I think they are. In fact, I think there was another update that they just did for the game when I played it, and it mentioned something about some bug fixes. I'm not sure what they were yet, but if they keep adding things to the game and maybe making some things easier for beginners like me, it's just going to only get better. And I definitely do want to keep playing this game a bit more, too, as soon as I can somehow increase my space. I do think it's kind of a fun challenge and be pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, overall, $8 on it. What do you say?
You know, if you're up for a good challenge and you like to beat yourself up a little bit, I think it's worth it, honestly, especially if the game is going to keep updating over time.
Plus, it's $8 and it's a VR game. That's pretty cheap for a VR game.
Yeah. And like I said at the start, like it was, I think the game is pretty well optimized. It's well rendered. It looks good. It's aesthetically pleasing. It's not like someone, you know, made a VR game and just threw it out real quick. I mean, I'm sure you've seen some so-so games before in the past too.
Yeah.
I think it's, I think it's worth it for sure.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on, chatting about these games. We got to get you on more frequently. I love having you on.
Yeah. I got to keep myself more organized and, you know, more into playing games. That's what I keep trying to get back into.
I'll force you into it.
Well, I guess if you're going to pull my arm like that.
But yeah, that is the end of the episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks again to Cole, to Purnell, and to Chris for coming on and chatting earlier. And to you, Chris, as well. We had two Chrises on this episode.
We win!
Yes, the Chrises are starting to outnumber the Joes.
Bring it.